The late Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. once said, "We must discover the power of love, the redemptive power of love. And when we do that, we will make of this old world a new world, for love is the only way." Some of you may have heard this quote in Bishop Curry's recent sermon at the Royal Wedding on the power of love. Echoing his call to the Jesus movement, loving, liberating, and life-giving, which is the very focus of the 79th General Convention in Austin, Texas, beginning this week, where fellow Episcopalians, including Father Patrick, will gather to explore complex issues that are challenging the Church all over the globe. Yes, liturgical revision will be discussed, but many of the issues at hand echo the question, how do we as a church respond in love to those who have been and still are marginalised, silenced and on the edge? As we explore aspects of immigration, Me Too, same-sex marriage and other big issues, please pray as the church stops to listen to these unheard voices and discern its response. In today's gospel, once again, Jesus demonstrates the power of love. In his compassion and transforming way, he acknowledges two unlikely and voiceless characters, a woman and a child, both whose gender and age have excluded them from society at many levels. One on her deathbed, another afflicted by a chronic illness, and who was additionally unworthy and unfit for the temple. And as is sometimes still the case, her condition, her hemorrhage, was taboo. For the woman to touch Jesus might bring her healing, but it would have also made him ritually unclean. Essentially, she would have to push not just through the crowd, but against a lot of pressure from her society, just to reach Jesus. When the annual United Nations Commission on the Status of Women met earlier this year, I was reminded that still today, many women across the world experience great pressure from the societies they live in. Some are excluded from participation in community life, are despised, and rejected. Some feel they are prevented, like this woman, from getting to Jesus. Further voices closer to home are starting to be heard of those troubled by trafficking and domestic violence. Dozens of stories have started to be told, and there are more to come, from those women and, yes, men who have been silenced thus far. Perhaps one message from today's gospel for General Convention, and maybe the whole church, is that there is an urgency to reach out to those on the edge and listen, really listen to their untold stories, for healing to really begin. Like the crowds in this story today, we often brush shoulders with Jesus without any awareness of the fact. Perhaps we are unaware of those reaching out to us, or are blinkered by the need of others for us to reach to them. How can we be more loving, liberating, and life-giving? And what do we do to obstruct that love in our world? As we look back to the gospel, I'd like you to wonder, if you were actually there in this crowded scene, which character might you be? Maybe like the bodyguards, or the disciples, I'll call them, there to protect Jesus, keep him on schedule. There's things to be done, people to see. Notice how others view his lateness in dealing with the woman. it's too late for the girl, or so they think. Are we like the disciples whose firm beliefs would struggle with anyone touching him, contaminating him, especially from such a woman as this? But worse still, they hadn't even noticed her. She was invisible. She was sick. As invisible as the person sitting with a sign on the side of our streets. Maybe you're more like Jairus and his companions, in panic mode, almost demanding Jesus to come right now. There's a character in Dad's Army, a British comedy, where Sergeant Wilson always yells, "Don't panic, don't panic!" almost as an antidote to himself and his own panic. We recognise the urgency of the voice of Jairus. Wouldn't any desperate parent want to jump the queue if they had just one chance of hope for their dying child, to bring life, to bring wholeness? As Dr. Ryder spoke the other week of the overwhelming urge of any parent to protect their child at any cost. Jesus understands the anxiety around, but doesn't get whipped up in the panic. He's calm. He has the whole picture. He already knows about the girl and what he needs to do in his time, in God's time, and in the commotion of his apparent delay to attend to the needs of this woman, Jairus' daughter, is perhaps put to one side. But actually, all is well, and all shall be well for her. Her life is in his hand. And as we hear later, he goes to the child, "Talitha kum," "little girl, arise." So often in our panic, our anxiety, we forget just that. He has the whole arc of our lives in his hands, not just the bits that panic us or the parts where we think we know best what he should do. And lastly, are we like the woman, knowing her need of Jesus? We don't know much about her, but I guess many of you here will know something about chronic illness that goes on and on and on. It's never just the physical symptoms, is it? Because with pain, there might be anxiety, restriction of movement, side effects, lack of sleep, and even depression, hoping each day would be different and it would just go away. We know the woman had tried everything, as they say, and she comes to Jesus in vulnerability and desperation. What has she to lose? She's already an outcast, defined by her illness. Perhaps there's a voice inside her saying, "You're not worth it. Don't waste his time." All those negative images she's had projected through her life all these years. Would he really want her to come to him? All she needed to do was reach out and touch the hem of his garment. Nothing more, nothing less. And she does. She touches him. If only just a little touch. Not assuming much for herself, yet believing he could make a difference. And he does. Jesus stops. And not only does he heal her physically, he acknowledges her in no passing glance or smile. He does not see her as an interruption to his day. He is stopped in his tracks, and she becomes the focus of his attention. As she throws herself at his feet, he is loving and life-giving. He listens to her story. He gives voice to her 12 years of suffering. "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Shalom. Go in peace." Daughter, not an outcast. Here we see the true heart of God, not one of judgment, but a God that will never forget her, always love her, and want to welcome her home. Not to someone broken, but as a beautiful, whole human being. And it all started with her faith-filled touch, reaching to the hem of his garment, connecting her to Jesus. The power of touch. We don't talk about it much, do we? But we use it all the time, in the anointing of the sick, in the laying on of hands. We use the oil. We touch a person's head and hands, and God touches their heart. Touch, reaching out, acknowledges we matter and connects us to one another and connects us to our healing, loving God. If you ever come for this ministry of healing, or in your prayer alone or with another, bring your suffering in whatever form, whatever hurt that life has brought you. You are invited to reach out with your heart and offer it to God, to touch the hem of his garment. He wants to take that hurt and give you shalom, peace, wholeness, not just with a scrap of cloth, but an enfolding of love as a garment in the way he gave love to that woman. The Corinthian church was exhorted to see that you also excel in the grace of giving. So as we share in giving shalom to one another, as we come to communion, may we too receive that love as we touch Jesus with faith and eager expectation. As we all leave here today, may we reach out in tender, loving care to the sick and the silenced, and pray for the transformation of our humanity and world to one that is loving, liberating, and life-giving. And also may we be filled afresh with power and life as we hear, little child, little church, arise.